take me down into your parents.
Hello, this is John Curtis, and you're listening to the Beat 2 Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm your host this week, Anthony Kendrick, and joining me for the show, we've got Nick Davey.
Good evening.
We've got Dan Tracy.
Good evening.
And we've got Richard Hero Hudson.
Guten Tag.
Are we all well?
Yeah, we're all right, mate.
Good stuff. We'll start with a few big stories which have caught my eye. I suppose they're not really good news stories this week. Gabby Agbonlahor's been suspended by Villa for his actions recently. He's had what's described as a hefty fine, and he's been stripped of the captaincy, so not looking good for him.
He's basically been a bellend as usual.
I think he's piling on as many pounds as Tyson Fury.
Another player
I don't like.
You're not a fan of Tyson Fury?
Oh, no, I love
Gabby Agbonlahor.
I'm not a fan of Agbonlahor, yeah. I mean, it's just the Villa fans. It's almost like they're trying to purposely wind the Villa fans up.
You look at Agbonlahor's statement today saying that the fact that he's been there at the club for 16 years and he should be a great sign of loyalty, but I think that's more the fact that no one would ever think of buying him. I think he's just a useless player. It's incredible how he's been such a top five player for so long, and it's not as if he's going to chip in with much of a goal tally in the championship. Season, so.
That's what I think. I'm thinking. I think he's going to be slowly one of these washed up has-beens that sort of like a bit like a Kevin Doyle type player who just sort of slowly drops down the league, really. Because I can't really see him seeing the championship this year. I can't see him setting that league alike next season. I think being the most normal person, I choose not to watch Villa on the telly because you know how the result's going to go. But I mean, I don't know how his pace has been this season. Is he still lightning quick? But I don't really think he's gonna. I don't think he'll do much in the championship next season.
The thing is,
this is someone who has to have a fitness regime mid-season because he's gotten so much weight. This is the kind of thing you have pre-season to get rid of the sort of the holiday weight. And this is someone who's having to sort of burn off all the extra pounds mid-season because he's just so unfit. And it's just any facet of what made him half decent and got him into the England squads are just gone now. He's just
Another player who's had a bad week is Liverpool defender Mamadou Sakho. He's been suspended after failing a drugs test. It was some kind of fat burner. It's thought to be, but it's not confirmed yet. He's probably going to get a month suspension. The club have decided with the player that it's best he doesn't play for the time being. But yeah, bad week for him, I suppose.
It's been a nice week as well.
It's a month suspension and then the ban, isn't it? So I mean, miss out 30 days worth of football at the moment, but you could be looking at someone like a year's ban almost, something similar to Polo Touré at City. So he misses Euro 2016 more than likely, so it's not a particularly good spell for Sakho at the moment, is it?
I was going to say, it's pretty, as the hero just said, it's probably actually the best he's played for a while, well, since he's actually joined him,
Both Sakho and Loughran, who, since he joined Southampton, Loughran's been absolutely shocking, but both of them seem to have turned it around in the last couple of months.
Mm-hmm. I reckon they've been told they have to up it or it's goodbye.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just Klopp got them playing well.
Do you think Liverpool, there should be any sort of punishment? I don't know. Do you think a year ban would be right?
I was just about to ask that question. Would the club face repercussions because of that? Because especially with Sakho scoring the late winner against Dortmund, I suppose it's hard to sort of punish the club for one player's indiscretions, but
the punishment is against the player and not the club. If you ate
it's a bit harsh. To punish the club.
Okay, well, let's stick with Liverpool as well. There's another story in the news today that they're going to probably end up paying $8 million for Danny Ings from Burnley. I think that's a reasonable amount, a right amount to come to.
About $8 million too much.
Well, with his injury at the moment, obviously, but I think it's clear he's got some potential.
It's not a transfer fee. It's obviously the sort of development and all that through the years at Burnley. So I think because people are comparing him to someone like Ross McCormack going for 11 million to Fulham, and you think, well, Burnley wants something near the same, but I don't don't think really sort of market value is that high. So again, like Richard said, it's only a good deal if he actually starts scoring goals, really, because you don't know how he's going to come back from the injury. So I suppose we'll have to just wait and see.
The thing is, these type of deals, they normally end up being like a couple of hundred thousand, maybe a million. They don't normally end up being this sort of number. So in terms of that, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, but he should have paid that much, shouldn't he, in the first place, really. You're looking at I sort of was in jest before when I said he was 8 million too much, but he was a young England international who'd had a good season. Then 8 million's probably cheap if you were back from another club as a proper deal.
Okay, well, we'll move on from that. We'll move on to the first round of our quiz. So, Richard, it's over to you to explain what's going on this week.
Okay, well, if anybody's ever seen Question of Sport, where they have the quick fire round and one of the team has to get up and give clues as to someone that they can see on the board but everybody else can't, it's basically that round. So I've previously, before the podcast started, sent to each member 15 clues, or 15 answers, and they've got to give clues to one of the other people. And both people will get that score. So everybody will have two rounds, one as the person giving the clues and one person guessing, and it'll be their scores totaled up over the two rounds.
Makes sense to me.
Everybody's going to get a minute for each round. So, Anthony, if you want to go first against, with Nick.
Okay. Am I? Well, I'm talking.
Nick's kind of cut this up a bit, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has a bit, but he'll be fine. We'll just add up the two rounds.
So, am I giving the clues?
Yes, you're giving those clues that I sent to you, and your time starts now.
What team does Richard support?
Man United.
Yeah. He played with Iniesta in the Barcelona midfield.
Fabregas.
No, the other one. He was Spanish captain.
Alexa. Xavi.
Yeah. It's not the guy in charge of the game. It's the guy who helps him out.
The Lino.
No, the other one. The other one.
Or Fish.
No. It's just a different term.
Official.
No, it's two words. Not the main guy is helper. I can't.
Assistant manager.
The first word's right. The
assistant referee.
Yes. Liverpool manager.
Jurgen Klopp.
When a guy gets fouled in the area, it's
a penalty.
Yeah, but where's it taken from?
The 6-yard box.
No. The points.
Penalty spot.
Yeah.
What about?
He was a FIFA candidate to be the boss of FIFA.
Luis Figo.
No. African guy.
David Ginola.
We'll move on.
Time's up.
That was terrible. It's hard. It's...
Who's at fault then? The answer.
Well, but no, that was my fault. It's difficult. Like explaining things. I don't know.
That assistant referee one got you.
Yeah.
That was a shock, yeah.
You should have moved on from that.
Yeah. The FIFA guy I was trying to describe as Tokyo Sex Whale, but I couldn't think of anything about him apart.
Should have said like Japanese porn dolphin.
That might have been the best way to go about it. Well, that was fun. We'll come back. We'll come back to that in the second round later in the show. But yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing how the other guys get on with their clues.
You got a whopping 5 points.
So who got the points?
Both of us.
Both of you.
Oh fucking hell!
Otherwise, we could stitch each other up. All right. Well, we'll move on. It was the FA Cup semi-finals last weekend. Wins for Crystal Palace and Man United in the final. Did anyone watch either of the games?
I watched the United game in a pub, surrounded by loads of Everton fans.
Was that enjoyable for you?
Right.
No, well, I wanted to know. I was loving it. Yeah, no, I was so it's quite nice being a neutral. So it was nice seeing. There was a few United fans in there. Cause any pub you go into, you're probably going to have some portion of United fans in there, given how big they are. So it was quite funny when they scored at the end, and the group of lads who took quite a lot of shit for like, the whole of that second half were loving it. But yeah, no, it was good. But I thought on the day United probably deserved it. I think David De Gea has proven why he's the best keeper in the world.
Best keeper in the Premier League this season. He was voted. He was in the team this season.
Best in the world, in my opinion.
All right.
Yeah, it'd be hard to argue against. There's only, a couple that are obviously near is up there, and the lad that nearly came to United in the swap, Navas, I think, is very. As a semi-final, though, what a game! That was just absolute quality for like the first half, perhaps not at the top level, but that second half. The amount of chances, it could have been like 8-all.
What
has that? Oh, I was going to say, has that defeat put more pressure on Roberto Martinez? Do you reckon?
I can't see him being in charge of Everton next season.
It's a difficult one because he's obviously done well, but then, well, this FA Cup defeat. I think the FA Cup was the one thing which could have saved him, to be honest, personally.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think also the manner in which they lost the Merseyside derby as well hasn't helped, has it?
No, not at all.
No, I think he'll probably go. I mean, they've got four games left, so they can get 12 points, puts on to 53 points, which probably still only maybe get them a top half finish. But so that could keep. But yeah, no, I think he'll be going at the end of the season.
That game versus Liverpool, that was. Like probably the worst Everton performance I've seen against Liverpool in a long time. They don't usually do great against Liverpool, but that was just capitulation.
Yeah, one-sided derby. I've seen Merseyside derby. Awful from Everton point of view, isn't it? Just rolled over and had their bellies tickled and just got torn apart. I think obviously you could accuse them of being focusing on the cup semi-final on Saturday, but turning that performance is absolutely shocking.
Yeah, it wasn't a great performance at all, and. I think Martinez will. I think he'll be going at the end of the season. And yeah, but it'd be interesting to see Everton maybe might go after and who could get the job. I mean, David Moyes would probably be the standout one for me. But another name that I reckon would be a good one for Everton is Eddie Howe of Bournemouth.
Well, you look at Everton and they've obviously had this investment come in. That's a sleeper club. That's a club that if they get a bit of money getting spent on them, they could go places.
I still personally think they've got, in my opinion, the best striker, excluding a fit Aguero in the league. I think Lukaku is the best striker in that league. Obviously, excluding Aguero when he's fit, I think Aguero's one of the best in the world. But I think when he's not, I think Lukaku is the best in that league.
I can't see him being there come the end of the summer.
Well, this is what I was going to ask. Is the conduct he's been having acceptable? Because he's saying things like, I want to play in the Champions League next season and all that. Is it acceptable for him to go out and say that? Because obviously he's got to look after his own interests.
I think he'd be a great signing for United.
But then, I'm saying, is it okay for him to go out and say, like, you know, I want to be doing that because...
Well, I think if he's a good player. I know, obviously, it can annoy fans a bit, but I think a player of that class... Everton should be doing that well as well. And I think the fans will think they should be getting the Champions League. So,
he's not moving United then, is he?
Well, that's the next debate, I suppose.
I was going to mention actually the other semi-final and the other loser, Kike Sanchez-Flores. We've been reading in the week that he's sort of under threat all of a sudden. In regards to his job, and they'll be talking at the end of the season as to whether he stays. Do you reckon it's a bit harsh for him to get the nudge out of Vicarage Road? Because
bloody harsh, I think.
I read an article saying that they don't want to discuss anything until the end of the season, but they're generally happy with his performance so far. I think it'd be ridiculous if he was sacked myself.
But... I think it'd be beyond ridiculous. What the bloody hell do Watford want? They've done amazing to get into the Premiership, and then I know they had the other tips that was in charge last season. Now, but they're 12th in the league. They've played some brilliant football this season. I think Everton had them down as sort of favourites to go down, or one of the favourites to go down. But they've stayed up with flying colours, and they've had a trip to Wembley. So,
you're right.
They went to sleep in the second half of the season, though, didn't they?
Yeah, I think. But I think, to be fair to him, he's already got the job done by Christmas, in my opinion. I that's no excuse to switch off. But then again, so did Palace, and I don't see.
If the season was the other way round,
yeah, I'm saying I don't see Pardew under any pressure. And I know they beat Watford in the semi final, but they're worse than the Premier League. Watford, they're 16th in the league, and why isn't he getting under pressure?
Pardew usually manages to get like a 15-year contract, doesn't he?
So. Well, that's it. Yeah, but I think it's harsh. I think he's been class this year. He's actually one of my managers of the season, or in the top five.
What did we make of the other semi-final? Do you think Palace deserved to get through?
Okay. I think it was pretty equal. I'd be very surprised if come the final that United don't win it.
Well, that was my next question. Is there a, you know, United are obviously the favourites. I think they were 4-11 on last time when I checked. But is there a chance that Palace can win it?
I think I said on the podcast before, I've got a bad feeling Palace are going to do it.
Yeah, you said actually before the semi-finals, you said that.
I've got a really bad feeling about this. So.
Well, okay, I can see being the game where Zaha really is up for it.
I guess with Bolasie,
they're always going to have a chance, though, aren't they? Being in a final, and it's just a two-horse race, isn't it? So anything can happen on the day. And all those other sort of cliches that will get spouted. But you're right, United are obviously going to the game as favourites, but there's no reason why Palace can't pull it off and get some revenge in the 1990 Cup final.
Well, I wonder how.
You look back at like Wigan versus City. Who'd have thought that Wigan would have beaten City that year?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, and there's just as much, if not more, of a gulf in class between those two sides than there is between the Palace and the United one.
You know, I actually had a bet on Wigan to win that year in the final. They were 12-1 the odds of them getting. Winning the FA Cup. Like, I guess anything, like as you say, anything can happen in a cup final. It's, you know, I guess not writing Palace off, but as Dan says, he's right. United are probably the favourites. Something United probably aren't favourites for, though, is the top four race. City and Arsenal are both on 64 points, United on 59, 5 off, but they have a game in hand. So, can United get into the top four?
One of Arsenal's last... Well, Arsenal and City have still got to play each other as well, haven't they?
Yeah, that's correct. It's straight after the second leg of the Champions League semi-finals, which we'll come on to later.
So, obviously, there's going to be points dropped by one or both of them in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Arsenal's other games, though, look dead certs for 3 points each, I seem to recall. And they got Villa in one of them, and somebody else pretty gash in the other.
Norwich of the weekend.
And Norwich, I don't think, look like they're up for the fight to escape. So you'd expect 6 points from that. And so, if they lose to City, United win the game in hand, then United could scrape it, but I don't think so.
Well, United, it's too difficult. They've got Leicester and they've got to play Leicester this weekend. They've got a game against West Ham away as well. They're the two, you know, difficult games, if you like. But four, you know, win all the remaining games, all four games, and it's top four. But obviously, that's a big ask.
I can't see them coming away from 6 points against West Ham away and Leicester at home.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do it. I would like to see them do it, but I don't think they will. Say 5 points is just a bit too much of an ask, especially West Ham. But I think what I will say is I do think they will beat Leicester at home on Sunday.
Well, come on.
One of the big things, though, is that obviously if they don't get fourth, or they do get fourth and then City and Liverpool win their respective European trophies, how much of an effect is that on both the current squad? Can they keep the likes of De Gea for next season, and who they can attract for next season?
Well, yeah, I guess they'd be having to look at like a second tier of players then, wouldn't they? Sort of their targets would be revised over the summer because they become a less attractive option.
Could you not argue they signed Di Maria and Falcao when they didn't have Champions League when Van Gaal took over?
They signed Di Maria, but Di Maria clearly did not want to come to United at the time. That was purely because he couldn't go to PSG that year.
And Falcao was just terrible.
Yeah, but at the time he signed, is the point I'm making, he was one of the most feared strikers in Europe.
Yeah, I was surprised by the Falcao one. In retrospect, I can see why the Di Maria one happened. Will there be many other players that have the lack of options that Di Maria have this summer?
No, I think he will. I think Falcao at the time, as say Anthony said, he was a deadly striker, so it was a good sign. But the Di Maria one was it never seemed to ever get going.
Could you see United being able to attract like somebody of the level of like Griezmann?
Well, there's talk about.
I don't think they will be able to.
Or someone like James Rodriguez, something like that.
I was just going to say that James Rodriguez has been linked with a move to United.
No chance.
I couldn't see it happening. Like if they only finished fifth, because it's just like the caliber of player would be too high for them. So the targets they think they would get in the top four, I think they'd have to sort of look further down the list as to who they would actually bring in over the summer. So someone like James Rodriguez would unfortunately be out of reach.
What do you think of the odds of Van Gaal keeping his job are?
Slim.
Irrespective of what happens between now and the end of the season?
Well, to be fair to him, if he does get fourth spot and win the FA Cup, I know it seems a bit Arsenal-like, but not Man United style, but can you stack him for that? It's not a bad season, but I still personally think they should. But I don't know what you guys think, especially
I've said I wanted him gone for a while now, and I don't like, apart from the very good game in the FA Cup, where players were actually allowed to play football and attack, the style of football is just not one of a United team. He's playing players out of position half the time. When you've got the likes, the other week against Tottenham, where you've got the likes of Martial on the team, you take Rashford off, you stick Ashley Young up front, who played
as... That was a strange one. I can just say I did watch the under-21s the week before we played Spurs, and Ashley Young played all 90 minutes up front. It wasn't like a spur-of-the-moment thing. It was genuinely... Maybe that makes it scarier in a way, that it was genuinely an option he thought was, you know, was a planned thing. But then...
It didn't work, though, did it?
Oh, no, I'm not saying it worked. I'm just saying it was a planned thing. It worked like a... Because it weren't like a spur of the moment thing.
Well, the guy that was the best defender of the night. Well, I'd heard he was he injured? Because I didn't think he was in the game v Spurs.
Yeah, he came off after an hour, didn't he? That's when it all fell apart afterwards.
Yeah, he came off in like the 62nd minute, and in 10 minutes he conceded 3 goals. But he was immense rather than Mensa. If he wasn't injured, why on earth take off your best defender?
I don't know. I'm not sure if he was injured or not. But there are some strange decisions. But then there's other things I agree with, like Martial, who'd have thought putting him out on the wing instead of up front, and I think that's a better position for him.
He is just looking absolute top draw quality. The game in the FA Cup semi final, some of the little skills that he's got in his locker. There was one where he was running down the wing and the ball was behind him, and he managed to know where the ball was and flick it with the back of his heel over the top of his head whilst running. And that was just like, wow, that's Ronaldo level sort of skill.
Yeah. He does look like, well, had an exceptional season. Someone else has come in and done really well, Marcus Rashford. We've had a Twitter poll put up, which is closed now, but it was put up earlier in the week. Who do you think is the better striker, Marcus Rashford or Kelechi Iheanacho of Man City?
Rash attack.
Rashford.
I think they're both very, very good for the next gen.
Rashford, just because he plays for a crapper team.
I'm going to book the trend and against my own team and go Nacho.
Do you think there's a chance Rashford's maybe overrated because he's English?
I think he's overrated because he's also for United.
Okay.
I think there's always a clamour when a young English United player comes through the ranks.
Yeah, I think you're right. He's got to be careful not to put him on the pedestal and get, you know, the whole hype machine behind Rashford. Obviously, what he's shown in his early sort of fledging career has been really interesting to see, and he looks a great talent, but I think you don't want him to sort of just be someone who sort of is a fly-by-night player and sort of disappears off the face of the earth in a couple of years. But like I say, Federico Macheda was another example, burst onto the scene, and everyone thought he was the new sort of Manchester United starlet, and then where, I don't can even say where he is now, so I suppose you've got to be careful and remaining just the extra. Is it Forest?
I think so. He keeps getting loaned out to Championship club after Championship club.
I think he's already done a lot better than him, though, because Makeda, he scored like the two in his first two games, and then already he was on the downward slope.
With Rashford, well, he scored 7 goals in 14 for United.
Yeah, so that sort of showing he's getting, there's more to him than what Makeda was.
I guess as well, Rashford's starting, I think he started all his games that he's played, whereas Makeda was like the super sub. I think he only started once or twice for United.
But I think Nacho as well, he's looking at, he could be a long-term like main striker for City, because what's Aguero now? Is he 29, 30?
28, isn't he?
I thought he was older than that.
Would you say he's moved above, say, Wilfred Bonny in the Manchester City pecking order up front? Because I think sort of second choice striker there now. I can't even see Bonny sort of staying after the summer with Pep Guardiola coming in. So I think he'll be afforded more game time.
When City make a sub now, he's ahead of both Bonny and Raheem Sterling. Sterling comes on after him nowadays.
The thing is I'll tell you, here's a stat for you. In total appearances for City, Wilfred Bonny's played 40 games in all competitions, scoring 10 goals. Iheanacho's got 11 goals, and he's only played 30 games. And yet, the young striker, he's a lot of his games, his appearances have come as a substitute as well. I don't have the number of how many were his sub, but he's, you know, had a lot less game time. He's got more goals than Bonny.
Aguero's only 27. Jesus, he just seems like he's been around forever.
Okay, well, I'll give you the results of the Twitter poll. It found Iheanacho got 39% of the vote. Rashford got 61% of the vote. So, according to our followers, Rashford is the better striker. And
I'll go with the majority then.
All right, well, let's move on to the second round of our quiz. So, Richard, over to you.
Okay, so for this one, this time it's going to be Nick giving his clues out to Dan. Good luck, Dan.
Okay.
Dan, apologies in advance, Dan. I think you've drawn the short straw, mate.
Okay, mate.
Okay, so Anybots, get set, go.
The current Premier League holders.
Chelsea.
Jack Colback's got a nickname after him. He plays centre mid for Italy. Scored a goal against England at the World Cup.
Pirlo.
Yeah. When your striker goes through on goal, but now where he's gone too soon, he's timed his run too late.
Offside.
Yeah. Everton's nickname.
Toffees.
Yeah. The current Leicester City manager.
Javier Ranieri.
Yeah, he's a pundit on Match of the Day, former Newcastle legend. Part of the class of 92. Part of his body's surname.
Dicky Butt.
Yeah. Some home games.
Stadium of Light.
They're in League 2. The nicknames the Bees. They're from, they used to play at Underhill.
Barney.
Yeah. Signing from MK Dons in the summer. He's just punched someone in the stomach.
Dele Alli.
Yeah. Boring manager, better get sacked. We've already debated him tonight.
Stop, that's it.
It's not bad, though.
Who was that?
That was good.
Who was that last one?
Louis van Gaal.
All right.
You got then 10 points.
Oh, bang!
Congratulations.
Yeah, you did twice as good as Anthony.
So I'm on to 15 altogether.
Yeah.
Well played. Well played, Nick. Well played.
Gosh, do you want me to read out what the other answers were?
Yeah, go on.
Motherwell, so I don't really know how I would properly describe that, to be honest with you. Though we could have been there for a while. Vincent Kompany would have been quite an easy one. Eredivisie, so thank God we didn't.
What sorry?
I can't even pronounce it, let alone know what it is.
What?
The Dutch
League. Eredivisie.
And Gary Lineker, so I could have easily described him.
What was the Jack Colback one?
The Ginger Pele.
Oh, Ginger Pele. Yeah, I wouldn't have got that one, so.
Yeah,
and of course, the Anthony had in his round after he failed so abysmally was the bowling ground, Kevin Keegan, Torquay United, that'd have been a tricky one, Mahrez, the Shaker Men, Dundee United, Colo Torre, the MLS, and Peter Beardsley.
I think this is a brilliant quiz, by the way.
It's a great quiz.
It is, it's a great idea.
Best one we've done, it's the best one we've ever done. So.
It's a quick one to put together, actually, as well.
Your ones are always quite good. Your one's always
got to think of 15 things.
I thought of another one you've done before. You know that one where I didn't get it when you wanted 10 obvious answers, so I sent you the most obscure answers possible.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on. It was the Champions League semi-finals this week. First, we'll start with the City-Madrid game. That ended 0-0. It was a really interesting game. I guess Joe Hart made a few good saves at the end to keep City... well, level going into the second leg.
Interesting's not a word I'd describe that game, if I'm honest.
Well, it weren't exciting. It was sort of, I don't know.
Boring.
I think
0-0 caught everyone by surprise. I think if you just said before the game there would be no goals, I think there'd be goals from somewhere. But credit to Joe Hart, made two excellent saves. Vincent Kompany looked like he hadn't sort of lost an edge. Come back. Obviously, he's only played, 20 games this season, but he didn't look like it. On Tuesday night, he sort of looked match fit and had a great game. So, obviously, Madrid lacking Ronaldo and Bale didn't quite sort of match up to that level and sort of had to carry the attack line on his own. So, it was a game of, dare I say, two halves. Madrid parked the bus in the first half. They looked quite content just to sit back and see he didn't really have enough to take advantage of that. Aguero looked quite isolated, I thought. But in the second half, they came into the game a bit more and Hesse hit the bar with a header as well. So, with the tie still very much in the balance, and I think City can still go to the Bernabeu and think, you know, they can get a goal. And who knows, it might be enough to snatch maybe a progression on away goals to the final.
Which team do you think will be happier with the 0-0?
I think probably City, to be honest, because I don't think 0-0 is the sort of awful result that it used to be. I think, like I say, City have certainly got goals in them. It's a case of whether they can shut the shop at the other end, really, which is going to be the key test, especially with Ronaldo due back in the second leg. Man City will obviously miss David Silva, but that'll be a blow due to his hamstring injury. But I think City have certainly fancied their chances.
I think Real Madrid will still do it, but I think they'll just be too strong at the Bernabeu.
I don't know, a 0-0 at home in the Champions League, I think is a good result. Because then, you get an early goal away from home and you can shut up shop.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I know it's easier said than done at the Bernabeu, but yeah, I mean, if you can, then it's a huge advantage because then you're forcing Real to get sort of two goals. So,
the Real team as well is a different team to what it was a few months ago. Zidane's changed the sort of the focus of the team. It's not just now attack, 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 attack. Rodriguez isn't playing as much. Obviously, at the moment, Ronaldo's out. I don't rate that Vasquez that much. So Benzema keeps on coming off at half time. So it's very much centred around Bale, and that's it. I very much like Casemiro, but he's not going to get you two goals. He's going to stop the opposition, but he's not going to be getting in on the assists or the goals. So I don't think Bale can score that many goals at the moment.
How critical do you think Ronaldo's return? Well, we don't know if he'll be back for the second leg, but do you think that'll be critical in order for Madrid to progress?
I think pretty critical, because he scores that many goals for them. You take him out of the side, going forward, they're not that great.
Yeah, they're not quite the sort of the threat that you think they should be. I think they'd certainly, they weren't flat on Tuesday, but it's certainly a different proposition, isn't it, when you're only facing Bale and Benzema as opposed to all three of them. Like I say, I think Vincent Kompany sort of contained them quite well, really. He sort of, it was a decent match for Bale. You know, they sort of went up against each other and Kompany come out, I think, on top. So if they can sort of replicate that in the second leg and, dare I say, nick a goal from, say, you know, Aguero or De Bruyne, then they've got every chance. So I think the game certainly sits in the balance, and Ronaldo they're being fit will obviously tip the scales back into Madrid's favour, but I think it's going to be quite close.
That's the thing, with Ronaldo out, and you know that Bale is pretty much the creative threat going forward, then you can just stop Bale. But if you have Ronaldo and Bale, then one of them is going to be getting space at some point. So, you know, it's a big loss to Real, I think, if he's not on the pitch. It's why Barcelona do so well going forward. I know all three of them are such great forwards, but you can't contain all three of them all the time.
Well, the second leg's next Wednesday. What's your score predictions?
I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. I think City might do it.
Same here, I think exactly the same.
Any prediction for you, Nick?
I'm just thinking to us. I'm probably going to go for a 2-0 Real Madrid win.
Okay, let's move on to the other semi-final then. It's Atletico Bayern, which I watched last night.
Atletico.
It was a 1-0 win, and I guess there's no argument there. That's a great result for Atletico, and important they kept a clean sheet.
I still think in this one, though, that Bayern could do it.
They could, of course, but do you think they've got a decent chance of doing it? Because I don't think they do.
Oh, I think they'll find Atletico at the Allianz Arena.
This is like the opposite to what I was just saying about Real, that you look at the Bayern side and they've got a lot of creative going forward and a lot of threats. So I could see them scoring a couple. I know Atletico have got such a good defence, but the number of clean sheets Atletico have had at home is unbelievable. But going to Bayern's ground is a different proposition, I think.
I mean, Bayern are pretty ominous at the Allianz Arena, aren't they? And I mean, let's not forget, Bayern are still in the hunt for a treble this season. And what with Pep Guardiola going in the summer, obviously that's going to be the perfect send-off if it does happen. And it would also mimic 2013 when Jupp Heynckes was set to depart and he also got a treble to make way for Pep Guardiola. So that would be a good sort of full circle if it was to happen. So, and like Richard said, I think Bayern have always got goals in them at home due to the swathes of talent they've got. Atletico Madrid are always tight at the Vicente Calderon, but they seem to not carry that form quite as well when they go on the road. So I think personally Bayern will overturn the deficit and get to the final.
And it's written in the stars for a City Bayern final, isn't it now?
Couldn't it be written in the stars for a Madrid final?
Well, we've had that before.
Still be an entertaining... Well, I think whoever gets to the final, it'll be a great game. I'm, you know, any of those four teams playing each other.
Yeah, there's good sort of storylines, whatever the combination really, isn't it? So we should be set for a good final regardless of who progresses.
Mm-hmm. Just want to stick with Bayern. It looks like Hummels is going to join them from Borussia Dortmund. Over recent years, well, Dan, you've got some interesting research into this, I saw before, but Bayern have signed a lot of players from their nearest rival. They've had Lewandowski and Götze recently, and then now Hummels.
Yeah, I'm just sort of looking into it earlier because it's becoming almost like an SPL, really. And I think Jurgen Klopp sort of touched on it in not so many words when he left Dortmund last season, because literally, no matter who your challengers are in terms of sort of close to Bayern, they'll just carry on the status quo and always be at the top. So there'll be the odd season they might not win the league, for example. But looking at a bit of research over the last sort of 15 years, they signed Lucio, Zeroberto, Balak, Kovac from their Leverkusen. And then that was between 2001-2004. And then between 2005-2008, it was Miroslav Klose from Werder Bremen and a few others that are not particularly big names. And then, like you say, the players that have come from Dortmund. So it's just must be almost disheartening if you're a German football fan, because you think you can only get so far, and then Bayern will just sort of pluck out who they want and they'll just carry on regardless, really. So doesn't sort of create a particularly healthy state in the Bundesliga, either, I don't think.
Well, you look at it though in the Premier League, though, and that's happened for a few years. That in the Premier League, like United pick off players from like Spurs and West Ham and Everton, City have nicked so many from Arsenal over the years. Now they've started stealing them from Liverpool, and there's pecking order still in the Premier League with that.
But then it's a different thing.
A bit more of a spread, though, isn't it? It's not. It will happen, obviously, but it may be from, say, sort of three or four clubs, whereas this one, it's just literally Bayern at the top of the pyramid, and anyone they sort of like to the look of who's creating a nuisance in that season, they'll just buy up to weaken their competitors, really. And you sort of think, well, how far can it, you know, it must be to the detriment of German football as a whole, really. It's all very well Bayern being the all-encompassing sort of superpower, but it doesn't really make for a great story each season. It's almost becoming a bit like French league, isn't it? Like a one-horse race each season. But it's interesting from a Dortmund point of view that they have to, reading today, they have to announce these signings even though they're not actually technically happening straight away, because they're a PLC, so anything that could indicate a share price decrease, be it a manager leaving or transfer speculation like this, has to be announced early. So they sort of almost shoot themselves in the foot, really, but it must be disheartening to lose another player to Bayern Munich.
Yeah, I'd say sort of a year ago, it wouldn't have been as big a loss. Almost had had quite a dip in form for a while, but he's been back to his best for the last sort of 6 months for them. And the Sabotic is also meant to be on his way this summer, coming possibly to Liverpool. So it's a bit of a swap round at the back for them.
But then this is the thing we say about how great the German league is. You know, like how it's the cheap tickets and all this and how competitive it is. But then is this like a darker side maybe to the German league we're touching on here? Is it not as great as we seem to think it is looking at it from the outside?
The German league is very much about what is best for Bayern and is then best for the German national side, is best for the country. The ethos of the nation is you've been like that for quite a while.
But is that a good thing, or?
It's won them all a World Cup.
All right.
It's a great
in this country, would we have it in this country if everybody got behind, like, City or Chelsea, that they can just get the cream of the crop from all the other clubs, but it won us the World Cup? Would we be happy with that?
That's the thing, I don't think we would. I don't think it would be accepted here at all. I think there'd be an intervention of some kind to stop that if that ever happened.
What, if England won the World Cup? Like, we bleat on about one that we won 50 years ago still.
If we have one team dominating the Premier League in a way how Bayern have dominated the Bundesliga, I don't think it would be accepted by the powers that be.
Yeah, but we have for the, you know, we haven't at the moment for the last, say, 5 years. But prior to that, we had United dominating for 20 years and Liverpool dominating for 15 before that.
But there was always, with United though, it's different because there was always a serious competitor in Arsenal, and Arsenal also won it a lot of seasons. It weren't like the Bundesliga, where, you know, for the last however many seasons, Bayern have won it at a canter, like the SPL.
It's only been the last 3 years that Bayern have won it, and Dortmund won it for the 2 years before that. But like for 20 years of United's dominance, didn't they win it like 12 out of 20? So I'd say that was a pretty dominant period.
Yeah, I guess with the Bundesliga, the state of the league is healthy in the sense that all the grounds are full every week, and it's, you know, it's great atmosphere and it's cheap and all those sort of great things you want to see as a sort of fans, you know, it's accessible and that's great. But I suppose what do you define a healthy league? Is it the fact that people are turning up through the turnstiles every week, or is it competition in the actual league itself and more than one team being able to win the trophy each season? So it's where you sort of pitch the sort of definition of a healthy competition, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly a growing resentment from Dortmund fans about the situation in the Bundesliga. Well, as I said, there has been this ethos of what's best for Bayern is the best for the German league. But Dortmund fans are getting more and more knocked off with that now. They want to be thought of as being on an equal footing to them, and it's still not happening for them.
I guess it's almost like, you know, you take one step forward and you think I'm getting somewhere. You know, you try and build another team after losing a star, and then you lose another one. It's two steps back, and it's almost like a constant rebuilding process, isn't it? So they'll do the hard work of getting in a player on the sort of lower, you know, slightly lower tier, build them up, you know, get them sort of to the next tier of quality, and then Bayern sort of take them back. I mean, Hubbard is a perfect example. He's an ex-Bayern defender, so he left because he was he had quite a few injuries at Bayern, didn't he? So he's got shipped out to Dortmund, and now, you know, he's done wonders for Dortmund, and Bayern are going to buy him back as a finished article. So it's sort of like, thanks for making him better, but we'll have him back now.
Mm.
Well, there's rumours that they're going to be getting Goats back as part of it, isn't there?
That would be a good, I suppose, a sweetener, wouldn't it? But I think it doesn't quite, sort of, it's not a perfect fit, obviously, because you lose as a centre-back, but Goats is a great talent, so, I mean, they're obviously welcome in back with all arms open, but I suppose it's just that, you know, it's like Groundhog Day, isn't it? Losing another player to Bayern Munich, it must be incredibly disheartening.
Yeah. Dortmund, though, they're not the white sort of knights of the Bundesliga. They are quite happy to grab players themselves from like Gladbach and Leverkusen when they're coming through. They'll replace him with a decent player from one of those clubs, without a doubt.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of working its way up the hierarchy, isn't it? So, like you say, you know, Munich sit at the top, Dortmund a rung below, and then there's a sort of another tier of clubs that will feed into sort of Dortmund. So, you know, it's just the natural order of football, really. But I guess it's kind of too
healthy, isn't it, Robert?
Yeah, that's right.
We'll move on from there and the final round of the quiz. So, Richard, over to you for the final time tonight.
Okay, so this one will be Dan giving clues over to Anthony.
I'll do my best.
You guys ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, on your marks, get set. Go.
The Gunners.
Arsenal.
Real Madrid manager.
Zidane.
A foul outside the box will be given a
free kick.
Norwich chairwoman. Lesbian Avenue.
Oh, Delia Smith.
Yep. Bayern manager.
Guardiola.
Yep. Strike partner with Dwight York of the Man United.
Andy Cole.
Yep. 1997 FA Cup semi finalist. Division 2 at the time. Lost to Middlesbrough.
I don't know anything a bit more recent.
Don't worry. If you don't know it.
No, I don't know.
Okay. Crystal Palace's ground.
Selhurst Park.
Gary's brother, assistant manager of
Phil Neville.
For a bit. Belgian midfielder for Chelsea.
Hazard.
Yep. The special one.
Mourinho.
Second in the SPL, playing red.
Aberdeen.
Yep. England World Cup winning captain.
Bobby Moore.
Yep.
Shit a brick.
How many was that?
Them up. You I've got 11. So on my reckoning, that makes Dan the winner.
Yes.
And that would make Anthony second on 16, And Nick last.
Cheers for those questions at the start, Anthony. Great work.
I was going to say, I think I deserve to be last after my horror show giving questions at the start.
Yeah, you were awful.
I'm sorry, Nick.
No, I'm unjust.
No, well played, both of you.
That was the easiest. That was also the easiest question to describe.
No, I'd say there were some tricky ones in there. Obviously, Chesterfield was a hard one. I loved the impression of Delia Smith.
That was sensational as well. So needless as well. That's why I loved it even more.
To be fair, it did help me. I was trying to think of her name and that sort of. I don't know.
But the fact that you gave for Chesterfield, that was a... Well, where you plucked that one from was great. the ones that you had left, you just got Bobby Moore in. You have Grampus 8.
That's the Japanese club, isn't it?
Yes.
Grampus 8, never heard of him.
Yeah, Gary Lineker moved there on obviously to get a bit of a payday before he retired. And the last one was Matt Letizier.
That's a difficult one to. I don't know, how would you go about this?
Well, thing? That was going to be there for if Shane was on it.
Okay.
Comes from Jersey, never missed a penalty, or something like that. One penalty, was it?
Missed in Southampton, I'm going to say, so should have really.
Yeah. Played.
All right, well.
Quiz that, though, because ultimately all you've got to do is list the sort of random things, and then the people have to do the hard work by explaining them. So I think that must be quite an easy quiz to source.
Yeah, it's really quick. You've just got to think of 15 things related to football.
Yeah, definitely do that one again. That's very quick.
Yeah, really enjoyed that tonight. All right, we'll move on. Final thing is the relegation battle. Moment, it's looking, well, Villa are obviously down and it's looking like 2 from 3 out of Newcastle, Sunderland and Norwich. Who do we think can stay up?
I think at the moment...
Sunderland out of three.
Why Sunderland?
I think there's a bit more to them, though. Rafa does seem to have got a bit more spirit together in Newcastle, but I just think have they got harder games left?
Sunderland are away at Stoke. Stoke season done now, isn't it? So there's no reason why they can't pick up a win on Saturday there. Stoke have conceded 14 goals since Jack Butland's been injured, and that's in 4 matches, so they're awful at the moment. So they're there for
the take. That's no coincidence.
No, exactly.
No coincidence, in my opinion. I think it proves how key Butland is, and in my opinion. Did he get goalie of the year?
De Gea won. De Gea was in the team of the season as a keeper.
Can't really argue De Gea, but Butland certainly...
He's been excellent all season, I completely agree with you.
Since that injury, Stoke's sort of season just sort of fizzled out, really. I mean, they were on the fringes of possibly getting the Europa League spot, but now they do well just to sort of maintain that top 10.
They won't get a Europa League anymore. They're 7 points off 8, so it's all over. Really, there's nothing for them to play for. And
that's right. So that's why I think Sunderland could take full advantage of that the weekend.
That's the problem, isn't it, when it gets to this point of the season, that there's a number of clubs that know that there's absolutely nothing to fight for. And they've already got the bags packed.
Yeah, they've already got their toothbrushes away and they just want to get down, really, don't they?
Guess with Newcastle, it was a spirited point against Liverpool and also a good point against City, but 2 points
isn't good. They need wins, though, don't they?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you said this a couple of months ago, you'd be like, yeah, fantastic point. But now it's good, but it's not. As I say, when you're really in this situation, it's all about 3 points and nothing else. I mean, they've got Villa away, haven't they, on Saturday? Palace at home on Saturday.
Even that, I think they could win, though, because again, Palace...
Palace, obviously, all they've got in their mind is the Cup. I think they know they're safe. I know that mathematically they're not, but they are, if that makes sense.
Do you think there's a chance they could get dragged back into it, though, if Newcastle get the win?
I don't think they will, mate, to be honest with you. I really can't see them. You'd have to be, what are they, 8 points above with 4 or 5 games left?
Yeah, Palace have got 3 to play. Norwich and Sunderland have got 4 games to play, and they're both in 31. Palace 39.
It's not impossible, but I think it's too much. But yeah, Newcastle, they can beat Palace. And I think Norwich have got Arsenal away, and can't Norwich picking up a point there.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, was it last week when Norwich lost to Sunderland? I mean, that was a big turnaround, because I mean, the problem all that we were saying that Norwich win.
I'm happy there's actually something to go for in the last day, because it's obvious the league's going to be all done by then. Top four will probably be done by the last day. So it's just good that the relegation might keep going to the last day. So at least there's something. Because I don't know, I love that on the last day when it's all like a, when it's like a survival Sunday or something, when you're looking at the tables and the results keep changing, the leagues keep changing, and I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. We want something to look forward to, don't we? We don't want it all wrapped up
on the last day. Certainly Sky don't as well. That'll piss them off trying to hype up last games that don't mean anything.
Of course.
Well, I think they've had that on their luck a few years ago when everything was done, but I think they managed to sort of get away with it because it was all about Fergie's last game in management.
Yeah.
Obviously, the focus was all on that rather than sort of anything to play for. But, you know, that would be a bit awkward if there is literally nothing to play for going into these games.
All right, let's look at the title race, though. Do you think it'll all be over? Leicester, obviously, 7 clear now. Has Leicester got it now, or is there a chance that...
I think Leicester will lose on Sunday. However, I think Tottenham will also lose.
Yes,
Leicester play United, and just to clarify, Leicester play United.
That'll be enough, won't it?
Spurs play Chelsea.
That'll be enough.
Yeah.
To be done, which is irritating. I don't like it when a league title one like that. But
well, Spurs win all their games, they'll end up 78 points. So Leicester need one win out of three really to secure the title. So
So they draw at Old Trafford and Tottenham win, it's still not over yet, is it? But.
Have you heard about the world's worst punter? He actually, this guy who put a bet on Leicester to win the league at the start of the season, he put 50p on before the season started, and after the first game, he decided to cash out his bet for 45 pence.
Yeah, what
a mug. There was an article on
BBC Sport. Did he cash out on one sale, like something like 60p or something?
No, he cashed out for 45p because they won on the opening day of the season. He thought that was as good as it would get. So, yeah, he's got his 45p and left. Ladbrokes are trying to get in contact with him to give him something to soften the blow. But
oh, no, don't do anything to him. Oh, no. Oh, my God. So what that is?
He's probably like head first in some canal anyway by now.
Oh, mate, I don't know what I'd actually do. I'd actually would be worried. I'd actually have to get people to keep an eye on me in case I do. Mind you, it's not like $2,500 is life-changing money, is it?
Well,
Turning 50p into $2,500 is still not to hurt yourself. Maybe if it was like something like the lottery or something, you would literally want to kill yourself. But $2,500, still
a bit though, wouldn't you? You would be.
It'd still probably get you by for a while.
Yeah. I bet he's really cheering on Spurs to hope that he does miraculously. Realise you might have
the right. 100% probably turn it. I'd probably turn into a Tottenham fan if I was him, but well, everyone should love the club actually, I guess. It's never gonna happen again.
Just one final thing I want to mention about Spurs. Dele Alli's been banned for violent conduct in the game the other night. Did anyone see the incident?
Yeah,
have it, Ali.
Well, what do you think of it first, Dan? I guess I've got to ask you first.
Well, he's been caught bang to rights, really, so you can't really defend that. If there are any positives, I'd say that he'll be rested for the Euros, which is good for England. Also, maybe it sort of would stop any sort of like Beckham situations like the 98 World Cup, so maybe that'll teach him a lesson not to be so petulant, because you can't get away with that in an international tournament. So there might be some good to come of it, but I think that's also not going to help Spurs' title race, so any slim hopes of evaporating with that 3-match ban, I think.
Okay.
I think you can take the player out of the lower leagues, but you can't take the lower leagues out of the player.
No, I think that's a bit stupid.
He's got that sort of...
Yeah, I suppose, actually.
Yeah, a lower league player has that sort of bit more of a fight in them.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but like you can say about anyone who's like... Oh, you can't take the youth out of it. You can say about anyone. But Rooney's like, 28, and he still does stupid stuff probably from top.
But like Jamie Vardy, he's a bit of a scrapper, isn't he? He's come through from the lower leagues. They know how to roll the shirts up.
So have loads of players though. Like you see, like these foreigners that do it all the time as well when they come to England and play. Just because they come from low league football.
The thing is though, it's a good attribute to have as long as it's used sort of correctly. Obviously, you don't want to go around punching players every week, but you're right. That sort of bit of grit, bit of determination. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that if it's managed well and can sort of contained and not then sort of use the detriment and.
Why did he hit him then? Did he miss a shot or something when he hit the first thing he saw? Because I do that when I play football, but I usually tend to hit the floor.
No, it was just sort of like just chasing for a ball really in the box, and Jakob was a bit of a go-to, but nothing really that he'd sort of retaliate like that. But Ali has got a bit of needle in him. I don't know if you would have seen against Palace when he sort of charged into the back of Johan Cabaye's head when Cabaye was on the floor. So there's a bit of a snidiness to him, and I think I think he's got to be careful because I just think that bits of petulance like that could be his undoing if he doesn't sort of get a lid on it. But yeah. We'll just have to wait and see, I suppose.
Jakob was
one. He'll be getting picked up on more now, I imagine.
That's right, yeah.
Jakob was winding him up, to be fair, during the game, though, before. There was clearly a bit of a.
Yeah, that's what players do, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't blame him, but there was some. Jakob was an innocent party.
Like I say, if that's playing for England and a sort of wiser international player against him pulls a trick like that and he falls for it, then he's going to be, sent for an early bath. So he's got to be really careful.
And if players know that if you give him a bit of chip, he's going to react, then they'll be doing it every week now.
Yeah, it'll be a target now, won't he? So he's almost shot himself in the foot, really.
All right, well, I think we've reached the end of the show, unless there's anything else anyone wants to mention.
Can't think of anything, to be honest.
To Nick about Brighton. Must be getting incredibly tight at the Championship now. So.
Yeah, on the 72 show last night, as I say, it's I've already been pretty much nervous on Monday, kicking in already. But as you say, yeah, it's but we know where we stand. Two wins, and it's Premier League football next season. No ifs, no buts, and it's something I've never ever dreamt of since I started going watching League One football. Just dreamt of, but never actually imagined this would happen. And so close, but I say it's still two games, but still a lot of football to be played. And
the top three are all on the same number of points, and we previewed it on the 72 show yesterday with Adam Virgo. It's a great show, well worth a listen.
Yeah, it was another fantastic show. It really is. So I can't stress enough to the viewers, if you enjoy this, then and you like your football league, if you've got a football league club, then like here, you'll really, 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 really enjoy the 72 show. So it's good, and I say every week we get a good guest on the show. So yeah, this is fantastic, and as is the 72 show. So, give it a listen.
Dele Alli's former club, MK Dons, are the club in focus as well this week. So, yeah. All right. Rich, did you want to say something, sorry?
Mine was just a bit of praise for my lad who came on as sub on the weekend because you always have to rotate the players. And within about 2 minutes, ball came out to him outside the box, about a third into the second, a third into the opposition pitch, actually. On the volley, top, itty, whack, like a rocket, top corner, got the winner.
Sounds like
my goals every week. good, well done. Last year was on trial at,
he had a trial at Bury, yeah, last year.
That's the one, Bury, yeah.
Tokenson a couple of times and had a look. Just knocking them up at the moment. Just hope that he keeps plugging away like he did last week and somebody sniffs
him. How old is he now?
10. He's 10. He's 10, so next couple of years he needs to do it.
You've got to keep treating him like a jockey, really, then, haven't you?
Yeah.
Just one thing I want to quickly mention. Tark, we did a poll on Twitter of the best interview we've done this season. And Tara Scott was the winner, the West Ham ladies midfielder. So take a listen to that. It's been voted our best interview of the season. And congratulations to Tara Scott and Chris Lappin, who did the interview very well. It's a good interview. I listened to it. Listened to it again last week. And yeah, worth a listen.
One single, so.
Wasn't the female player of the year that was voted last week actually the Manchester City lady?
Yeah, Christensen.
Macclesfield as well.
Yeah, she's class.
Yeah, Christensen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a Macclass.
Okay. I don't know where to go with that.
You can't go any higher than that.
Oh, no, that. Okay, very true. Well, thanks for joining me for the show tonight, guys. It's been a great show. You can follow us on Twitter. It's at V2Football. You can check out our Facebook page. You can check us out on YouTube as well. Goodbye from me and goodbye from everyone else.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.
Goodbye.